Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I want to start with the Dallas Cowboys quarterback situation. Man, this is something else. It's gone from Dak Prescott playing at a record-setting level to Andy Dalton playing below an Andy Dalton level to Ben DiNucci playing at a Ben DiNucci level. I mean, actually, I really have no way of gauging how Ben DiNucci played on Sunday night against Philadelphia. Like, I mean, it wasn't impressive at all. But compared to what? I mean, maybe for DiNucci, that was awesome. He might have been out there playing out of his mind, playing out his ass, for all I know. I mean, yeah, he was horrible, but for him, that might have been one of his best moments ever. For all I know, this dude walked off the field thinking he was Dak Prescott, Troy Aikman, and Roger Staubach all rolled into one. How the hell would I know? Because I don't know Ben DiNucci. And the reason I don't know Ben DiNucci is because he's Ben DiNucci. But I would tell you this. I'll tell you what I do know. I know the Cowboys have the most jacked up quarterback situation ever. And it's getting even worse. Andy Dalton missed that Eagles game because of that concussion that he suffered when John Bostic nearly decapitated him against Washington the week before. And now Dalton is going to miss the Sunday game against the Steelers. Can't say I'm surprised. Can't say I'm surprised because I'm surprised his dome is still attached to his shoulders after that hit. I mean, that was straight sickening.
Dalton back to throw, and they protect him, and he rolls right and runs out of the end zone and slides at the 10.
That's going to be a late hit.
Oh, he got nailed.
Yep.
And he is not up yet. His helmet got knocked off, and there are literally four flags down there. Dalton's hurt. Ben DiNucci, warm up. Because it's going to be an automatic.
Cowboys radio. His helmet did get knocked off. My only shock was that his head was not still in it. So if you had told me that he was going to miss the next few weeks because of that shot, that would not surprise me at all. If you had told me he was going to miss the rest of the season because of that shot, that would not surprise me at all. If you told me he was going to miss a chunk of the rest of his life because of that shot, I'd accept it. Except that's not the reason that he's not going to go against Pittsburgh this weekend. The official reason is he's been placed on the reserve COVID list. Uh-oh! So Dalton has been self-quarantining, and the team is doing contact tracing, but so far there have been no additional positive tests. So with Dalton out, that means that Ben DiNucci is reaching for his bonnet once again, buckling up his chin strap, and running back onto the field, right? The hell he is. Not when he has the likes of these two legends gunning for his reps. The legends that are Garrett Gilbert and Cooper Rush. I mean, seriously, if you're Ben DiNucci, what's worse than being told you have to compete against the likes of Garrett Gilbert and Cooper Rush for the right to get back on the field? Nothing is worse than that, right? Wrong again.
Wrong.
You know what's worse than being Ben DiNucci and having to actually compete against Garrett Gilbert and Cooper Rush for the right to play on Sunday? Being told by the team you're not even good enough to compete against the likes of Garrett Gilbert and Cooper Rush. Being told that we've seen enough of your act and you're not even good enough to compete against the fourth stringers and the practice squatters. Sit your ass down. Get your ass to walk. I mean, damn, that's got to hurt. There's no way that doesn't leave a mark. You've got a chance to start an NFL game. An NFL game for the Dallas Cowboys, no less. And after one game, they're saying, dude, you can't even hold Garrett Gilbert or Cooper Rush's jocks. Whoever the hell they are. Listen, in his defense, what the hell did Jerry Jones really expect from Ben DiNucci? He's Ben DiNucci. He's a rookie seventh rounder from James Madison making his first NFL start. Of course this guy got sacked four times. Of course he fumbled it twice. Of course one of those fumbles was housed. Seriously, what was Jera really expecting from this guy? Well, apparently a hell of a lot more than he got. And he was disgusted by what he did actually receive. Get a load of this comment from the old man.
Well, I think that it was a lot for him. I think we certainly as a team paid the price to have him come in and under those circumstances. And that's almost trite. It was, frankly, more than he could handle. I don't know what you could have expected for somebody to come in under those circumstances.
What? Dang, Jarrah, look at you. Look at you saying, quote, we certainly, as a team, paid the price to have him come in under those circumstances. Like, are you saying, man, that hurt us way more than that hurt him? Because that sounds exactly like what you're saying. Like, one thing to bench the guy, but entirely another to kick him in the ass on the way out the door. And for the record, Gilbert has thrown 6 passes in his NFL career. He has never started an NFL game. And his biggest accomplishment as a pro football player was what he did for the Orlando Apollos in the Alliance of American Football. And it's not like Cooper Rush is accomplished anymore. His NFL pass stat line is 1-3-2. 1-for-3 for 2 yards. That's that guy's career. I mean, what a kick in the junk for DiNucci. One thing not being able to beat out Andy Dalton, quite another not being able to beat out either Garrett Gilbert or Cooper Rush, and still another to not even be allowed to try to beat out Garrett Gilbert or Cooper Rush. Show me a bigger kick in the package than that. They won't even let you compete against a guy whose claim to fame was lining up under center for the Orlando Apollos in a league that no longer exists. And some other dude with 2 career passing yards. Not 2 career TDs, 2 career passing yards. And how does that not rattle you? How does that not wreck your confidence? My dude is going to be in counseling for years after hearing that. And do you remember at the start of the year when everybody was talking about how the Cowboys had the best quarterback room in the league? Remember? Remember when they had Dak Prescott as their starter? Remember when they had Andy Dalton as their backup? You know, the best QB room in the league this year. Now they've got the worst QB room in history. Dak is done for the year. Dalton is dealing with a concussion and the virus. Ben DiNucci's been kicked to the curb. And you're looking at starting Garrett Gilbert or Cooper Rush against the undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers. Good luck with that, fellas. Never mind the scoreboard. If they get through the entire game without anybody dying, consider that the biggest dub ever. This is a time for the coaching staff to really step up and scheme their way to victory. Too bad they're, quote, totally unprepared. And that they don't teach. They don't have a sense of adjusting on the fly, and, quote, they just aren't good at their jobs, end quote. Looking at that quarterback depth chart and how that matches up with that Steeler defense, I've got one thing to say. How about them Cowboys? Coach them up, Mike. And make sure that they're not totally unprepared.
Totally.
We are joined by running back Jordan Wilkins. Jordan, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you all for having me on.
Good to have you, Jordan. All right, so I know you're thinking about Baltimore. Before you do that, can I get you to take one look back on Sunday because you're coming off such a big game. You had 20 carries. You had more than 110 yards from scrimmage, that touchdown, that 2-point conversion. How good did it feel to show up in such a big way for a critical game like that?
I mean, it felt great. I just try to, do my part on and try to give the offense, a little boost, just playing hard. And, I felt like I accomplished that in the game. But I have some things I wish I could have done better. But, it was a great game overall.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Do not make a shake this time or eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty, it's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And it goes with you wherever you go. To the game, to the gym, to the beach, wherever. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality that you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you do not see it, just ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Indianapolis Colts running back Jordan Wilkins. Hey, Jordan, sorry about that, but I want to make sure we did that the right way. Good to have you back.
All right. So, yeah, sorry about that. Thank you.
All right. So, listen, so you were talking about how that there were some things that you might want to clean up, but the fact of the matter is there are people around you that were making the point that that was your best game as a pro. Could you make that argument? Did it feel that way to you? Was that your best game?
I think all in all it was, you know, just playing a solid game overall. Obviously, I feel like every player in every game, you know, wants to go back on a couple plays and be like, oh, I wish I did this or did that. But overall, you know, it was a good game. You know, got in there, you know, kind of got my confidence up as the game was going on. And then just the play calling and, you know, the O-line was doing a great job. And, you know, I was just trying to follow my
– Wilkins, now you're part of a talented backfield, and you made the point afterwards, quote, it's not even really about waiting your turn. It's like Coach Tom Rathman says, you can't count the plays. You've got to make them count, end of quote. So how do you go about making sure that you make the most of your opportunity when you get it, when you're never exactly sure what you're going to get or when it's going to come?
Yeah, it's just part of this business, honestly. It's always staying ready. You know, you never know. Obviously, a running back is a physical position, you know, and it, you never wish injuries upon anybody, but, you know, that's a likely thing in this game. And, you know, I just try to do my part, staying warm on the sideline. You know, I feel like I'll get in the game, you know, throughout the games at some point, and just try to make my impact however I can, whether it's one player or if it's, you know, 15 to 20 plays. You know, Coach Rathman has kind of, you know, taught that to me since I came in is, hey, it don't matter how many plays you get. If you get one or you get five, you know, make them go. And, you know, that's kind of the mentality we have in the running back room. So, you know, we just try to make plays when we can.
Jordan Wilkins joining us. Speaking of Coach Rathman, man, my man was a beast. I mean, this dude was a beast when he played. He was a real problem, as they like to say. What's he like as a coach? What's he like to play for?
A real problem.
That's great.
No, it's great to play for. The thing with him is obviously, you know, through his career, his standards are just so high. And, you know, he has those same standards for us as a group. So, you know, there are no, you know, okays on missed mistakes or whatever. We got to play, you know, pretty much a perfect game. And that's what we strive for, at least. And but it's great, you know, when you have somebody, you know, that you can look up to that's been in the, you know, been in this business for, you know, almost 30 years, maybe over 30 years, you know, nothing but eyes and ears for him and listening and trying to learn from, you know, what he has and, you know, his advice he can give us. So it's awesome.
Jordan Wilkins of the Colts is joining us. After the game, a number of guys were talking about a moment in the second quarter when the Lions were flagged for unnecessary roughness after a sack of Philip Rivers. Quentin Nelson said afterwards, quote, you can't do that to our quarterback, end of quote. So if Nelson is saying something like that, it sounds like somebody's about to pay a price. He was also talking about how much he enjoys blocking for you and your patient approach as a running back. So what's it like running behind him and the rest of that offensive line?
I mean, it's a blessing for sure. You know, I mean, just the monsters and the mentality that they have, you know, each play, every game. You know, it kind of makes it easier for us running backs. You know, we got to have that same mentality of, you know, we're going to fight hard, you know, and get these couple extra yards because we know they're working so hard to get up the lane in there. But, yeah, I mean, I can't say enough running behind these guys. You know, it's a blessing for all of us. And, you know, we just try to do our part and, you know, get that run game going. So it's fun for sure.
Jordan Wilkins, my guest, excuse me. So if the defense you feel like is taking a liberty or taking liberties with your quarterback, did that kind of flip your attitude? I mean, no matter what, you're going to go as hard as you possibly can. But is there a little something extra? Did the mentality or the attitude change after that shot to your quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, you know, kind of like Quentin said, you know, you can't do that. You can't do that to our quarterback. You know, it's just not acceptable. But also there is a fine line. You know, there's a fine line between starting and reacting. You know, and getting a penalty because you don't want to put your team in a bad situation. But, I mean, what we can do from that situation is, like you said, is, okay, y'all want to do that? Okay, well, let's nut up and let's get going and you know, let's see who really wants to fight for this game. And, you know, that's the kind of mentality we came out with after that play. And, you know, kind of was like, okay, well, this is what y'all want. Let's get it. And, you know, that's the mentality from this whole team, the organization, is, you know, we take care of our players, our teammate, and, you know, we expect the same in return. So, yeah, that kind of got us all fired up, you know. So hopefully that won't happen again. But if it does, you know, we're all here to protect him.
Jordan Wilkins joining us. You talked about what it's like to run behind the guys in front of you and that mentality, the offense and the guys up front. What about the defense? I mean, you've got a really nasty defense that is forcing turnovers at a really high rate right now. They're not allowing very many points. How much do you guys then feed off what the defense is doing, and how much do they feed off what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a collective group, all three phases with special teams, defense, and offense. Obviously, we're on the sideline and the defense is out there. You know, we get fired up seeing them fly around smacking folks. You know, basically, you know, I think last game a couple of us were talking like, I'm glad we aren't playing our defense, you know, because just the mentality and the intensity that they run around with, you know, gets everybody fired up. And, you know, that's what, you know, we have going, you know, at this organization. It's just everybody wants to make plays. Everybody wants to play hard and make each other right, you know, and plan for the, you know, not our own names on our back, but for, you know, the Colts organization. And, you know, that's what just makes this, you know, this game so fun. And this team, you know, we're just clicking, you know, and trying to keep clicking on all cylinders, you know, as the season goes on. And, you know, each week we feel like we're taking a step in the right direction.
I mean, it sounds like you're having a blast, and you've got another big opportunity coming up this weekend. You've got the Ravens coming to your place on Sunday. They're 5-2. You're 5-2. Does it feel like just the next challenge you have on your schedule, or is it bigger than that? Is this an opportunity to make a statement about how good your team can be?
You know, it's kind of both of those. Obviously, we know it's just the next game up, so we're not going to do anything different as far as getting ready for this next game. But we also know the magnitude. You know, this is, you know, one of the better teams, if not the best team we've played up to this point. You know, they bring a couple, you know, they do a lot of different things on defense, and then they have great players as well. So, you know, there might be a little something extra in this game just because both teams, you know, have great records and, you know, obviously, you know, we want to keep our hot streak going. So, you know, it should be a fun one Sunday for sure.
He's coming off a big game, 113 yards from scrimmage on Sunday in the win over Detroit. Another big challenge coming up this weekend. Indy is at home against Baltimore. Running back Jordan Wilkins, my guest. Jordan, nice job. Really good to have you on the show. I appreciate you and that conversation. Well done.
All right. I really appreciate it. Y'all take it care.
You know, I do not do politics on this show. You should also know that does not mean that I don't have thoughts. That does not mean that I don't have opinions. That does not mean that I did not vote, because I have and I do all those things. It just means I don't bring any of it around here. However, if there is a sports angle or a jungle tie-in, I certainly will mention it, and I'll mention it without endorsement. And there are a couple of quasi-political threads that we have covered on this show that do need updating. And more importantly, some closure. The first is the Senate race in Alabama that pitted incumbent Doug Jones against former coach Tommy Tuberville. There's your sports tie, Tommy Tuberville. The only reason I even bring this up, the only reason I even brought it up initially, is because Tommy Tubbs was straight skewered by Dougie Jones in a 60-second ad that ran during halftime of an Alabama-Texas A&M game. Again, I don't have a dog in that fight. I don't care. But I do have an appreciation for great smack and some pretty amazing writing. This ad had both those things, and it was about sports.
Quitter is how he quits. Tommy Tuberville, after telling his players the only way he would leave his team at Ole Miss would be in a pine box, Tommy Tuberville quit the next week. He quit on his players at Auburn, but still collected a $5 million buyout and $250,000 no-show job before moving on to Texas Tech. He quit on his players at Texas Tech, too, even walking out of a dinner with a recruit to take the job at Cincinnati. Then in his last coaching job, Tommy Tuberville quit on his players again. And as he slinked away to booze, he told Cincinnati students to go to hell.
Hey, go to hell. Get a job. Hey, go to hell. Get a job.
Now, after moving to Alabama just 18 months ago, he wants you to trust him as your United States Senator? It's a six-year term. Fear the thumb, remember the quitter.
I'm Senator Doug Jones, and I approve this message because I'll never quit on the people of Alabama.
You know why you approve that message, Jones? Because that's like the best message ever. I mean, that was savage. I mean, I've heard some brutal, brutal political ads, but that one might take the cake. I mean, that's an amazing ad. That is savage. So when they lay out Tuberville like that, Obviously. Tommy the Quitter. Quit, right? Well, if you thought that, if you thought that he would be dead on arrival yesterday at the ballot box after that ad, he was not. He was not. In fact, quite the opposite. He has a new job as of Tuesday because he crushed Doug Jones by a 20% margin and he ripped his gig. So no, he didn't quit. Not yet. In fact, he won going away. Not my state, not my business, but definitely a loose end that I need to tie up after we all heard and saw that ad in the middle of a college football game.
It's how he quits.
It's not just that he quits or how often he quits. It's how he quits.
It's how he quits.
And he won. And he won. All right, so now let's get to the result that we all wanted to know going into last night. If you have followed this show since March, you know that a legendary jungle caller and, in fact, a smack-off champ named Silk Bra started a journey into local politics and did so on this very program. It all started with him thumbing out a tweet, diming out some beach volleyball players for not being properly socially distanced on the sand. It then progressed into a town hall appearance where he publicly cracked Baltic Republic case studies. And then it culminated with an announcement on this very program that he would, in fact, run for Huntington Beach City Council.
Your boy Silk Bra is going to be running for one of the three open seats on the City Council. I got my first three signatures today. And yeah, brah, it's going to be premium content all the way through November, brah.
My bra went third person, brah. Putting that aside for a minute, brah. The bra entered a race that would directly pit him against 14 other candidates for three open seats on the HB City Council. One of the 14 candidates was UFC Hall of Famer Tito Ortiz. Silk V. Tito for HB City Council was way too good for the jungle to ignore. In fact, not just us, but for Spectrum One Cable News, who did a feature, keep in mind, 15 candidates, but this cable news outlet decided to feature these two candidates.
MMA Hall of Famer Tito Ortiz has entered a different type of battle here in his hometown, Huntington Beach.
I'm here just to make it safe for the future of my children, my grandchildren, and my community.
It's the same fight the surfer is also facing. Eric Silkinson, which the locals know as Silk Bra, usually fights for waves in the lineup, but here on dry land, he's going for a different ride.
See what she did there? Amazing. And she silk-brawed him. So for weeks, I mean, hell, months, we've been working this beat. And I want to make it very clear, at no point did this show ever endorse either one of them or any of the other candidates. We were merely spectators with a giant green garbage bag full of popcorn. And yesterday, the big night finally arrived. Eric Silkinson's big day at the polls. Could he parlay his unbelievable name recognition and platform for education and safety into a seat on his hometown city council? Could Eric Bra shock the world and win an election? Would he be beating Tito or joining Tito? Or would they both be out on their ass? So many scenarios, such high stakes. And then the results. Eric Silkinson, you are not the city council member.
Andrew, you are not the fire.
In what can only, unfortunately, be described as a landslide beatdown, Silk Bra did not win one of the three seats on the HB Council. Now, trust me when I tell you this, it brings me no pleasure in making that announcement. I'm not sitting here dancing on my man's grave, although I know so many of you are about to. First, the results, then the reaction. Silk finished with 3.5% of the vote. If there were 12 open seats, he would be an appointed public official today if there were 12 available seats. Unfortunately, there were only three. And finishing 12th out of 15 just did not cut it this time around. Tito, on the other hand, ran a winning race. He finished first. He had 14% of the vote. And he will be one of the three new council members in HB.
That's how Huntington Beach steps up! Woo! One, baby, number one! I expect no less. Wanna why? Because Huntington Beach loves me, baby. And I've worked hard. I'm living the American dream. I want to give the American dream to every people, every person here in Huntington Beach. Yes, sir. That's how we do. We call us winning. Winning!
Wow. Showing some class in victory.
Winning.
Gracious winner. Winning.
Winning.
Tell me how my ass tastes, Silkinson.
Winning.
Anyway, like, I want to say this. Did Silk get waxed like one of his surfboards? Yes. Yes, he did. Or are you going to crush him for it? Yes. Yes, you will. Except I'm here to say for the record, I've got nothing but respect for my guy. He looked around his city. He wanted to improve it. He took the time and the energy to attempt to do just that. And he put himself out there on the national airwaves, local TV segments, HB rallies, where he campaigned to make Surf City, USA a better place. How many of you can say you've done that where you live? How many of you can say you've done that in your backyard? How many of you can say you ran for public office in an attempt to improve your city? Silk knows better than anybody, this is the jungle. This is not the garden. Silk knows he's going to take some serious heat today from a bunch of strangers who have never met him nor know what he's about. But he's not going to be taking any of that from me because I do know the guy. And I'm not really in the business of shredding or going in on a teacher for running for public office in an attempt to make his hometown a better place. And yes, he did deliver on one of his promises. He promised to bring premium content to the jungle, and that's exactly what he did for 8 straight months. So yesterday may not have been the night of the bra, but it's still the year of the bra. Yes, finishing 12th out of 15 literally makes him the New York Knicks of city council candidates. But at least he was in the game. At least he was in the arena. At least he was in the Coliseum. At least he was in the fight. We all get our asses kicked at some point. All of us. Everybody. The only way you don't get your ass kicked is if you never get into a fight or you never put yourself out there. And he did. Congratulations, Eric, on a well-run campaign. Yes, you got your ass handed to you on a plate. But not for lack of effort. I respect the hell out of it, my man. You gave it a good run, my guy. Now I need you to handle that loss with more class then Tito handled his win. Now, that said, if I were you, I would turn off your TV. I would turn off your radio. I would turn off your phone. I would turn off your Twitter. I'd basically turn off until 2021 because that so-called name recognition around here is a double-edged sword. And the JTP has been up all night sharpening the blade.
I do have some name recognition.
Let's get some rapid reaction in here quickly. Bill Ratka, quote, I guess some name recognition does not mean what it used to. Dear Rome, you mean to tell me Ben DiNucci went in thinking he was qualified and has managed to get beat by no names? I'm all too familiar with that situation. Signed, Eric Bra. Bra. 1 for 3 C1 tweets. Worse, Silk, returning to his part-time job of teaching and collecting aluminum cans. Worse, Silk, firing Rich Flores as his campaign manager. Phoenix Tree Rodent tweets, Well, Jim, at least I didn't finish DFL. Best regards, Silk Bra. DFL, dead freaking last. Did you know that a fire department responds to a fire every 24 seconds? That's a fact. That's true. So you want to make sure that you're doing everything you possibly can to take care of your family and your loved ones. Having enough first alert smoke and carbon monoxide alarms is one of the best things that you can do for your home and your family. You want to make sure that you install alarms on every single level and in every bedroom of your home. Now, once those alarms are installed, it's also important to maintain them by testing them with regularity. Remember, alarms do not last forever, and they do need to be replaced at least every 10 years. If you can't remember the last time that you replaced your alarm, then it's best to just replace that unit completely. And I've got your best option. Here's my favorite. It's First Alert's combination smoke and carbon monoxide alarm with a 10-year sealed battery. The alarm provides, obviously, 2-in-1 protection against both smoke and carbon monoxide, and you don't need to worry about changing that battery out for a decade. Lastly, make sure you take time to discuss home safety with your family. Make sure you plan and practice an escape route, and remember to practice it at least twice a year. For more information on fire safety products, safety tips, and educational activities that you can do at home with your family, just go to firstalert.com, Fire Prevention Month, firstalert.com/Fire Prevention Month. He is Jason Lockenfora, JLC. How are you?
Wow. That might have been the best introduction ever, Jim, which is saying something, because you've rolled out some dandy ones for me before, but wow, I feel warm and fuzzy all over.
My brother, I'm hyped on you. I'm always hyped to have you on, so you know it. Jason Lockenfora, my guest. JLC, what about the NFL trade deadline? Let me start right there.
Yeah.
The NFL trade deadline, though, is very different from the NBA trade deadline and the MLB trade deadline in terms of trades and big names moving. Jason, why is that, and what was your reaction to what you saw yesterday?
You know, I think part of it inherently has just been cultural. There's been this sort of lingering old school thought that it's hard to make football trades because it's 11 on 11 plus special teams, and you know, there's schemes that must be learned and new ways of thinking that must be digested, and you know, that all takes some time, and there's something to that. I mean, remember when the 49ers acquired Garoppolo? I don't think he played for at least 3 weeks. It might have been four while he learned, you know, while he practiced, while he learned what guys could do, while he absorbed the playbook. So I think there's still some lingering sentiment to that. And then obviously we're in a pandemic right now, and there's not a burning desire across all of sports for owners to spend more money right now. You know, I mean, baseball's talking about its nuclear winter. And the NBA doesn't know when its season is going to start. And the NFL doesn't know how these playoffs are going to go off and what those revenues will look like. And will the Super Bowl definitely be on time? And what will the offseason look like? So, you know, the teams that had salary to dump, in many cases, chose to view those as football trades where we're going to maximize value rather than what they were, which is a way to clear money off the books. And the acquiring teams, the potential contenders, we're like, hey, we'll take that salary off your hands, but you got to help us out with some of that money, and you're not getting a first, a second, a third round pick for that guy. It's not happening. He's a rental for us, and he's a high cost rental at that. So the sort of market forces did not align.
It's an excellent explanation. Jason Lockenfora is joining us. All right, so let's talk about some individual situations. I had Jordan Wilkins of the Colts on GLC in the first hour. He had more than 100 yards from scrimmage. He had a touchdown in that win over Detroit. Now, their defense is playing at a really high level. You've written about this for CBSSports.com. How much of the credit goes to DeForest Buckner, and how far can they go with that defense?
I mean, I think a lot of the credit. I mean, he anchors like few people can, and he's, you know, a rare breed of defensive tackle who can penetrate the pocket, who can collapse it, who can do it himself in that regard, and then who's obviously exceptional against the run. And you think of all these blockbuster trades that have happened and how much, you know, the Raiders got for Khalil Mack and how much, you know, Amari Cooper and what Laremy Tunsil went for. I mean, a mid-first-round pick for Buckner, who's 25? I mean, yeah, you had to pay him, but the Colts had a lot of money to spend. Andrew Luck retired. You know, they hadn't gone big in free agency in a while. He's an absolute difference maker. I mean, that run defense is 20 yards a game better, and it's the same scheme. It's a lot of the same guys. Yeah, they're a little healthier at linebacker. The secondary, they brought in some guys who maybe are a little surer tacklers, who keep people from, you know, limiting how often they get past the third level and really break off long runs. But no, they don't have to blitz at all. They sit back. They play zone almost three-quarters of the time because they know with Buckner there and you know, Justin Houston still brings something off the edge, they don't have to devote numbers to affect the quarterback enough. Yeah, it's kind of vanilla. It's not super sexy what they're doing over there, but it's been highly effective.
Jason Lockenfora joining us once again. All right, so they're at home, Jason, against Baltimore. Baltimore's got to go without Ronnie Stanley and Tyree Phillips on the offensive line. You certainly could argue that Lamar Jackson has been good, but not what he was last year. The loss is on the line. How big of a blow is that for them, and how do you think they'll adjust?
I think they'll be fine at left tackle. I think Orlando Brown going from the right side to the left side. Now, Orlando Brown was a hell of a college left tackle, and will he be everything Ronnie Stanley is at his best? Maybe not, but they're not going to have to alter what they do. The problem becomes the right side, where you know now it's DJ Fluker at right tackle instead of an all-pro or pro bowler in Orlando Brown. And right guard, they're going to have to probably rotate some guys around through practice and maybe a little bit in games before they figure out who the best replacement for Phillips is. Yeah, look, the Ravens have had a very, from the point Ronnie Stanley gets hurt in that game and Judon gets ejected, it's been a bizarre week. I mean, Marlon Humphrey has COVID. He's been fighting with the media a little bit about, you know, the regulations for what players should and shouldn't be doing. They don't really have a linebacker to speak of right now because they're all going to miss practice this week because they were close contacts of Marlon's. It's going to be a very strange week of practice. Sorry about that. Copper.
Is that Copper?
I'm a big Ravens fan, so, you know, he's not happy with the state of affairs. So, yeah, Jim, it's a tough week for them, and they're facing an opponent that doesn't do anything all that remarkable offensively, but when Rivers protects the football, that defense can carry the day.
Jason, is that Copper?
I think I'm all right now.
It's Copper, though, right?
That's Copper. Yeah, one bad ACL and the mouth to back it up.
He's a warrior, man. He's the best. Jason Lockenfora joining us. All right, so as you pointed out on CBSSports.com, the Steelers, though, Jason, they were down 10 in the first half. They ran only 20 plays in that first half. Baltimore holds the ball for over 20 minutes in that half. Yeah, Pittsburgh comes back and they win.
Yeah.
How impressed are you with what they did and really what they've done over the course of the season?
Super impressed. And that's another game where they're undefeated. You can't say, oh, they didn't play anybody. They played a good team. And Tennessee the week before that was a good team. And the Steelers didn't play close to their A game for 60 minutes. They were dominated in the first half. And they won. And they won on the road. And they won overcoming a 10-point margin. And they won despite the other team rushing for 265 yards and them rushing for, like, nothing. And Connor basically being out of the game the whole second half because it was all five wide, hurry up, empty set. And, yeah, I mean, they still won. I mean, it was Lamar had a poor game, and those four turnovers certainly were the difference. I mean, that was the biggest factor. But, no, the Steelers, I think, are one of the few truly balanced teams in the NFL. They can beat you with the run. They can beat you with the pass. They can beat you with their defense. They can beat you with special teams. You know, I think Kansas City can do that. I'm not sure anybody else in the AFC is in that category. And on the other side, I'm tempted to put Tampa there, but I don't know about anybody else because they all have their warts either offensively or defensively, or in some cases, kicking special teams.
Talking to Jason Lockenfora for a few more moments. JLC, since you mentioned Tampa, what does the arrival of Antonio Brown say about them? And then what do you make of Tom Brady going out of his way, not only to fight for Brown, but to bring him back into his home?
Yeah, I mean, I reported that 2 weeks ago on the NFL Today, and you know, this past Sunday added even more to it, which is that not only is he going to be living there in the guest house or whatever, but that Tom Brady has vouched for his availability, for his temperament, for his attitude, for his off-field decision-making. Like, what time does he have to be there for COVID testing? Oh, yeah, he'll be there. I guarantee it, because I'm either driving him or my driver's driving him, but he's getting there. And what time does he have to be for meetings? And what time does he have to be in the facility? And what time would he have to be for treatment? And what's he going to be up to when he leaves the facility? I mean, he really gave across-the-board assurances that he's having a bad day. I'll get Tony Robbins on the phone with him. Like, He needs a massage. I got it covered. Like, he needs extra whatever. We got it. And the moment that fails, or the moment that something happens to where he, you know, Antonio Brown has an incident on the field or off the field, it's not going to be three strikes and you're out. It's going to be one and done. And that was made very clear to Tom Brady from Bruce Arians and other in that organization. In terms of what it says about them, it says about them that they're winning, willing to win at all costs. That's a person whose behavior, even what's known, what's been captured on his own social media feed, or what he's said, or what you can go find him on video saying to various women who have been a part of his life in various capacities, there's enough there that it was a disqualifier for a number of owners. And if not for the presence of Tom Brady, it would have been a disqualifier there. It was last year, you know, it was for Bruce Arians and Jason Light a year ago, but he brings it on the field. And that, and Tom Brady has been talking for a calendar year now about what it was like that 1 week he practiced with this guy and that one game they played against the Dolphins and what a difference maker it was. And Robert Kraft wouldn't allow him back in that building, but the Glazers have let him in this building, and I suspect on Sundays he gets things done.
JLC joining us. JLC, one last question. The Giants are 1-7. They're right in the battle for the first pick in the draft, or at the very worst, one of the early picks. You saw Daniel Jones again this past Monday night. What do you think? Do they stay with him going forward, or do you think they look at Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, or somebody else if they're available when they're picking?
I think it all depends who's sitting in the chair, Jim. If it's still Dave Gettleman, I think he would hold an auction for that pick and try to get a ransom for it, and then say that's how we're going to build around even more Daniel Jones and incubate him. If he's not the GM, I think most guys who come in there, if you're guaranteed Lawrence, you're not finding out what the pick costs. Kind of like the Bengals with Burrow last year, where no matter what Miami or anybody else threw at him, they weren't moving. I think you have to take the player, and then you find out what you can get for Daniel Jones.
After several years of doing our simulcast, we have ourselves product placement. Look at the pyramid of beef.
Is this the beef jerky segment?
Oh, yeah, it is. Check it out. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, look at that gigantic pyramid of beef right next to me. Let's get right at it. Quickly, what's your beef? Let's start on social. Vic Rudy. My beef is Joe Buck. We know Troy Aikman is a Hall of Famer. Stop with these annoying intros. And they do that everywhere. Wherever there's a Hall of Famer, the Hall of Famer is always introed as the Hall of Famer. I love this guy's handle. At Lanier Messenger. Props, bro. God, that was the 39 worst days of my life, selling the Lanier Messenger. My beef is that Silk didn't have fake Silk do his speeches.
Come on.
Look who's back. And Romy, you rock. What's my beef? My beef is with substitute teachers that gravy train their hardworking wives, try to run for political office, and are surprised that they didn't win. Stay in your lane, Silk. Doyer Blue Raul. That's his handle. He tweets, "Dear Jim, my beef is with 72-year-old Tom Brady, still throwing lasers and running from dudes half his age while I can barely make it up one flight of stairs to my bedroom." Daniel tweets, "Jimmy, I have a beef with the citizens of Huntington Beach," signed Eric Silkinson. Jim, my beef.
Bruh.
This is actually an awesome email. "Dear Jim, my beef is with the follically challenged bag I saw driving down the boulevard in front of me with his convertible top down over the weekend. Note to bag. I get it. The weather was nice. You want to show off your sled. Unfortunately, I had to be behind you, getting sprayed with that snake oil / magic potion that was slathered into that shredded wheat biscuit sitting on your dome. Keep your top up, loser." Jim and Temecula, that's really good. "Dear Jim, my beef is with being the day after Election Day and political attack ads still polluting the airwaves. Putting up with these god-awful ads for the past 5 months have been enough of an affront on humanity. I sure as hell don't need them after the election is over. Mike in KC. Hey, Rome, I have a beef. It's with you bored to death Facebook people who have to take a selfie of your chest showing your I voted sticker. Even the kids by the front door on the first day of school picks think that's stale. Here's an idea. Place your vote. Go home, you bags. Aaron in Iowa. Hey, Rome, my beef is with people who park their car right beside yours when there are 100 open spaces in the lot. That's a great beef. That's strong. Jeremiah in Greenville. Jimmy, I got a beef with those monthly emergency alert system tests. Why can't they tell you up front that it's just a test? Instead, they blare that doomsday tone for what seems like an eternity while you contemplate your imminent death before saying, just kidding, you're not going to die. It was only a test. Knock it off, EAS. You're scaring the crap out of people.
Knock it off!
Brent in PC at Wooden Laconic. My beef is with the guy at the urinal who inexplicably continues to whistle a tune even after we awkwardly make eye contact as I enter the restroom. Let's go to the phones. We're doing the What's Your Beef segment, and we're doing it on the phones. All right. I knew this guy would have beef. After all, he did finish in 12th. Let's go to the candidate himself, Huntington Beach, Silk Bra. Eric, what's going on?
Bruh, my beef is that I got screwed in the election. And I'm going to take it all the way to the Huntington Beach Supreme Court. Come on.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
That was the fake Silk. And the fake Silk, I believe, just said, I'm going to take my beef all the way to the Huntington Beach Supreme Court.
Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Back at it. What's your beef? Let's go to the phones. We go to Orlando. Steven in Orlando. Steven, what is your beef?
My beef is with the government of the Philippines. I ran to an article on the UK news outlet, the BBC, of a police officer that got killed by a pack of roosters as he was breaking up an illegal cock fight. They should know better, Jim. If you put someone in the middle of two angry, raging cocks, so someone's going to get torn a new one.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Like, I know that guy, and I can't quite figure out how I know that guy. I feel like maybe he was one of the self-glossers. Was that the rooster? It would stand to reason, right? His beef was cockfighting, and he self-glossed the rooster, I think. Now, I think that story that he told is actually a true story. I think a cop did die trying to break up either the ring or the rooster fight itself. Either way, he got run. Listen, beef segment is for you to share your beefs. You don't get run. Like, if you have an actual beef and you treat this thing with the respect it deserves, you won't get run. And how can you not treat it with respect? I've got the entire XR4TI on the other side of the glass rocking their camo lids. And if you're watching me on TV right now during the simulcast, look at the pyramid of beef I have to my left. Let's keep going. 1-800-636-8686. What is your beef? Kenny, Albany. Kenny, what's up? What's your beef?
Hey, nothing of respect for you, Jim. My beef is with a lack of conversation about a New York Jets perfect season. I remember how hyped you were for the 08 Lions, and I know the sequels is never good as the original, but Pimp, trust me, get hyped. There's not a window on that schedule. We will not choke this away. It's the perfect season. War Joe Namath getting caught in a malted hog friends with Susie Colbert. Late.
My man, Kenny. Nothing but respect. Now, you're right. Hey, listen, I am hyped. I am hyped. I'm always hyped for a team to run the table backwards. Running the table backwards to me is so much more impressive than finishing undefeated. It's just that it's been done before. It's never going to be as good as the first time. But you're right. It doesn't mean that it's not an amazing accomplishment, because the Jets are bad enough to do it. I got news for you. The Giants, although they do play hard for Joe Judge, and they do. I'll give you that. They do play hard for Joe Judge. They're also bad enough to do it. It's a good thing they've got that one win on their record already, because that could be a loss. All right, now, in terms of the cockfighting guy who got run, I said that it's vaguely familiar to me. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I think he's the guy, and I knew he was a self-glosser. He's the chicken man, I think, right? Let's go to Orlando. Hi, who's this?
Romy, they call me the chicken man.
Really, why?
I have been on a bit of a healthy kick as of late, and all I do is eat chicken for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I am practically bringing these poor fowls to the brink of extinction. Not to mention the fact that the chicks love me, and I have a big rooster. But
wow! Wow. That guy. And wouldn't you know that on the day of What's Your Beef, he would beef about that story in the Philippines about cockfighting. The chicken man. Why do the chicks love the chicken man? Quote, he is Yogi Roth. And Yogi, it is game week in the Pac-12. I'm just going to come right out and say it. How great is ball, my friend?
It's so good, and we finally say it, right? We've been anticipating. We've had a couple. Well, we might say it here. We might talk about football there. But now it's finally back on the West Coast, and I'm really proud about the process. They got it back here, and I'm really excited about the teams that are about to kick off.
I'm going to talk about some of those teams with you. It feels great to have it back. You know, Yogi, I had Carl Durrell on the show yesterday. I know you've spoken to him recently. Overall, in your conversation with Pac-12 coaches, how have they approached this fall and getting ready and prepared for the upcoming season?
Well, what a great question. I think the word of the year is fluid, right? And just kind of, I just got off the phone with the head coach in this conference before this, and it's taken it literally day by day, right? Because we've seen around the country where, you know, one day, one test can change the trajectory of your program and what's going on with it. So I think that's the word. I also think that for coaches like Carl Durrell and some of the new coaches in this conference, the time away from the game, at one time you were like, man, this is going to be bad for Colorado. Carl Durrell needs to get on the field with his players. And now I look at how the season has kind of shaped out in terms of being postponed. He's had a lot of extra time in terms of 12 hours per week to be with his team on the field, unique time with his players, of course, on Zoom, powerful time around social justice and everything that the Buffs are doing as an example, that I think it's going to allow first-year coaches like him to not be at the disadvantage that we thought they would be when spring ball got postponed and training camp got postponed. I think it's actually going to be a relative net positive for programs like that in terms of how they prepared for their upcoming season.
Yogi Roth is joining us. All right, so Oregon is number 12 in the AP poll. They're going to open up against Stanford. What kind of a season are you expecting from the Ducks now that Justin Herbert is in the NFL?
I can't wait, man. I'm excited for this program. Now, it's to be noted, they lost every starter on the offensive line, right? They don't return. I think they returned one start, which is the youngest in the country. 74% of their team are underclassmen. But Mario Cristobal has recruited as well as anybody in the country since he's become the head coach there. They also, I think they've got an incredible culture. And I think culture is going to be, it's dramatically overused. But I think this year in the Pac-12, it's a critical word, because if you have one, it's built upon discipline, built upon trust, built upon all the things that every coach says to his team, then you're going to be able to hopefully stay relatively COVID-free. You're also going to be able to focus with no crowds, especially if you're young, and focus on the goal that you had, which for Oregon coming into the season pre-pandemic with the likes of Penei Sewell, Javon Holland, Thomas Graham Jr., Brady Breeze. Those are players that have opted out for the NFL. They were loaded. I mean, they were the darling pick for the college football playoff outside of Bama, Ohio State, and Clemson. So I think that their culture, next man up, some of the younger players that I referenced among that percentage of youthful underclassmen, I think they're going to meet the moment. I really do. I don't think it'll be easy. I don't think they need to win with style points like we thought a couple weeks ago when the 7-game schedule was announced. I think because the Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas, I think they've taken that conference out of the playoff discussion. I think if the Ducks can go undefeated, which I think they can, They'll have every opportunity to get to the playoff. And by the end of the season, with their new offense, new coordinator, new quarterback, and, oh, by the way, probably best running back in the conference, and C.J. Verdell, they have a chance to make some real noise. So I'm buying on the Ducks. I'm all in on them. It won't be an easy road by any stretch, but I love what they're building there, and I think they're really creating a lot of steam for the years to come.
Pac-12 firing up. Justin Herbert is moving on. Yogi, I got to get your thoughts on him. What about Herbert? What do you make of the job that he has done since taking over as starter for the Chargers?
Well, you feel it just like I do, man, in this, you know, in this community here in Southern California. He's really respected, right? It's not like he came in and just had to play because of injuries. I mean, he's played because at a high level because that's who he is. You know, I go back to why he returned to Oregon for his senior year. It wasn't only to take a team that went 4-8 his freshman year when he was thrust into the limelight to a Rose Bowl like he did last year, but it was to learn how to become a pro. And he hasn't flinched on this stage. You know, his maturity has shown. His ability to just do his job has shown. I think when I watch him, I don't see him over-trying and trying to make, you know, plays that a lot of guys can make in college because of undisciplined defenses or just defenses being out of position a little bit. I don't see that. I see him operating, but not being robotic. So I'm excited, and I think his personality fits L.A. regarding he's not looking for attention, he's not seeking a spotlight, but he can handle it. And I think that's the mixture, that's the potion for somebody who could be a superstar in the face of a franchise. And I think that's him. And I'm quite honestly, I'm not surprised by the way that he's played by any stretch of the imagination, because this is who he is. Dude's an elite passer. He sees the field really clean. He's brilliant. And you talk to him in terms of the type of mind that he has. So processing and handling the hype and the stage has really been impressive. And I kind of expected it whenever he got his opportunity.
I couldn't be more impressed. I love everything about the guy. It's everything to the points you just made. He's cerebral. He can beat you with his arm, with his legs. The guy's not afraid at all. Really good athlete. I love the guy and the way he's playing. Yogi, what about USC? They're number 20 in both polls. They open up against Arizona State. What are your early thoughts on the Trojans this season?
Really anticipating watching them compete. I mean, if you think about it, the quarantine and all the postponements, no team has probably benefited more in terms of recruiting, the brand. I mean, if you asked a fan, like, hey, who did USC play last? I don't think everybody would say Iowa in their bowl game. And, you know, they couldn't deal with the defensive front of the Hawkeyes. I don't think anybody's going to say that. I think they're going to say, man, they're crushing recruiting. Did you see that new video that they took down on Twitter? You know, they're working on the branding. They got this great quarterback. They got skill positions for days. That's going to be the narrative on them, and they're right. The challenge is they're going to get tested right off the bat against a team in Arizona State that has, I think, an NFL player at every position. You know, they got real depth, but as does USC. So I think the reason I would pick SC in the South, which is what I would do heading into the season, is not only they're going to score a lot of points. I mean, that's college football that we're in, and they got elite receivers. We know all that. But it's the middle of their defense, man. You know, they lost Jay Tafele, who opted out, who I thought was the best interior defensive lineman in this conference. But they return a bunch of players who played a lot, like Marlon Tuipulotu. He's been playing since he got on campus. At linebacker, Paliie Nauteoate, I'm telling you, watch number one. He'll be all over the field. He's one of my favorite players in the country. And then Talanoa Hufanga, their starting safety. You know, he's kind of been mentored a little bit, I understand, by Troy Polamalu over the course of the last couple months. He's a guy that could have easily opted out. So I look at the middle of their defense, and I think it's real. Granted, new defensive coordinator, new system. But if they can get the play that is expected out of their corners, which they'll get tested in this conference, as you know, they'll have a chance to take a run at this thing and be undefeated. Explosive plays have been an issue for them over the last couple of years. They can eliminate those. I think they're going to have a chance to bring back the swagger, bring back, you know, all the attention, all the limelight, all the historical elements that we've come to love USC for. I think they had a chance to do it because I think they have the horses down the middle of the defense that will allow them to slow some teams down.
It is great to not only talk ball, but talk Pac-12 ball. Yogi, what about the Pac-12 overall? Do you see a pathway for a Pac-12 team to the college football playoff?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll flip it on you. Like, you watch all these games, and I think the staggered start has been brilliant. Like, I don't want Corona to ever be a part of our lives again or a pandemic, but I love the staggered start to a season because you don't miss any games. So I've watched Oklahoma, huge brand, incredible program. They don't look that impressive, though, in terms of being an elite program where you just give them the benefit of the doubt. Same thing with Georgia, same thing with Florida, same thing with Michigan, same thing with all these big brands that a lot of the times I think because of either weak non-conference games or, you know, 6-0 start, all of a sudden they're just lauded and given the benefit of the doubt. now, because of the lack of games, I don't know if you'd agree, but you kind of watch and you're like, yeah, if like Cal or ASU or Oregon or SC or Utah, if they went and had to go play, or UW had to play any of those teams that I just referenced, I wouldn't be scared of those games. I just wouldn't. I think everybody kind of looks the same. So I think that's going to benefit the Pac-12, because I think the committee, of course, is watching every game, and because of the staggered start, have been able to probably focus even more on some of these other teams in these conferences. So I don't think that the Pac-12, by any stretch of the imagination, is out because of just the above-average play by some of the elite blue-blood programs that we've seen. So an undefeated team to me gets in. I don't even think it's a big discussion, but I don't know. What do you think? That's crazy?
Yes. No, I don't. I would agree with you. I think that's fair. I mean, I want to see how this all plays out and how they look, some of these teams we're talking about in the Pac-12. But yes, nobody else to me is standing out head and shoulders above everybody else. Yogi, I want to ask you about something. I want to step away from football for a moment and talk about life. This is something you and I do pretty frequently when you come on. I want to ask you about your mom for a moment. She passed away on October 20th, and you wrote a beautiful reflection about her and how she lived her life and the fact that she was a daughter of Holocaust survivors. What was your mom like as a person?
Oh, man. I don't know where you're going to go with that. I appreciate you bringing that up. She was awesome. She loved college football. She loved when I came on your show. She always would tune in, man. So thanks for doing that, because always brought a big smile to her face. But I'll never forget this. I was with her, and she had lung cancer, and she was diagnosed on Christmas Eve, which was the day we found out we were having a baby boy. So it was kind of like that whole life in, life out moment. And she competed like you'd imagine, you know, somebody that I'm like my parent to compete, like daughter of Holocaust survivors to compete. She just wouldn't flinch. And it was the last couple, it was really one of the last days I was with her, and she was frail, you know, cancer had kind of taken over her body, and she was changing her bed, changing her sheets. And I say, let me help you. And she goes, no, Yogi, you can tie me, but I'm gonna do this on my own. She just had this grittiness to her. So she did it, and as she was doing it, and you have to imagine, if she was picking up one sheet, Jim, it'd be like you picking up a 50-pound dumbbell. I mean, she barely could do it. She didn't have a lot of energy. She couldn't catch her breath because where the cancer was located, right next to her heart. And she said, you know why I love sheets so much? And I said, no, Mom, I have no clue. And she goes, because when I was a kid, I slept on newspaper, and I slept in a drawer, and we didn't have any money. And my mom, once we came to America, she said, when we save up money, we're going to make sure we have great sheets in this house. And she turned to me and she said, Yogi, when you're at somebody else's home who is an immigrant, who is a refugee, who had nothing, and you sit on their bed and you see the sheets that they have or the pillows that they have or all the things that, you know, they may have that you would perceive as nice, recognize they probably didn't have any of that. And somebody had to really go to work. And somebody had to compete. And somebody had to have grit. And somebody had to have, you know, charm. And somebody had to have passion. Somebody had to have heart. Like, somebody had to have all those intangibles just for the simple thought of, hey, I want to put sheets on a bed. And what that did for me was not only like brought tears to my eyes hearing her share that as I thought about my mom sleeping on newspaper, but it also like reminded me of like where you come from, right? And I think it's really important now, and I've urged so many people who are parents who, you know, are into their last stage of life to like share with their kids. Because us as children, we need to know that we're a part of something greater than ourselves. Like for me, that cemented like that made sense. That's why I'm so gritty. That's why I'll take anybody, you know, to the carpet all day long. Like, I just have a no flinch, no quit mentality in life. That's why I was a walk on to him as a broadcaster. But hearing it, my mom tell this story made sense to me of like why, you know, I am the way that I am. And I just urge parents to tell those stories and kids to ask them, because it would have killed me if somebody told me that story when we were sitting Shiva for her versus her telling me that. So yeah, as a human, man, she was awesome, and I appreciate you asking me about it.
Good night now!